Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, you know, this president promised to bring everyone together. He promised to heal the partisan divide. And, you know, we often mock that and say that he hasn't made good on a lot of his promises to reconcile America. But for 2 years straight now, he has managed to do exactly that. Last year in the Senate, this year in the House, and possibly this year in the Senate, unanimous rejections of the president's budget proposals, 97-0 last year in the Senate. And this year, I believe last night, it was 414-0 in the House of Representatives. So the good news is that all of Congress hates the president's budget, and hopefully we've got some good news later today that the House has passed, most likely the Ryan plan, but there's also an even more conservative version of the budget out there, too.
Yes, for all of you who thought the Ryan plan was too squishy, it's called the double Ryan plan, I believe it's what it's called. It says something that some folks will sneer that the Ryan plan is not serious, whereas Obama's budgets for the past 2 years have gotten zero votes in the House, zero votes in the Senate. One of the things that kind of jumps out at me is, Greg, you may be a little harsh to the president. Remember, during the debt ceiling fight, Obama was not actually writing his budget proposals down.
Right.
Carney was kind of, incredulous from Chuck Todd and Jake Tapper, kind of expecting that the budget proposals would actually be written down for the long-term dealing with the debt issue. So it's progress. It's on paper. It's unacceptable to everyone, but at least they've taken pen to paper and put some numbers down on it. Two thoughts here. The first thing is, it's kind of interesting the administration doesn't realize what they're handing the opposition when they write a budget, that presumably they would have some sense that there would be things in there that would make it toxic even to the most loyal Democrat. And then the second thing is that the Democrats in the House wouldn't realize that how much they've just, created a very, easily avoidable headache for the president. I mean, just what was in that bill that they found so unacceptable that they couldn't possibly vote for, that Charlie Rangel with his 90% Democrat district couldn't vote for. Kind of interesting and striking there. Perhaps they felt the president's budget wasn't liberal enough, didn't spend enough, I suppose. But it says something. And obviously, look, we can all have a good laugh about this. When the Senate Democrats refuse to pass a budget, I guess we shouldn't be all that surprised that they're not willing to vote for the president's either. But it just says something about how thoroughly unserious the administration has become when they can't get anybody, any moderate Republicans, any moderate Democrats, any extremely liberal Democrats, anybody to vote for the president, vote for the budget as written out by this administration.
Yeah, that's very telling. Now, the explanation from a lot of Democrats will be that, look, Republicans brought this forward just to shame the bill and to mock the bill, but the president's budget was on the floor. It was up for an up or down vote, and we see what the numbers were. So you can spin it however you want, but nobody likes this thing, and nobody's certainly willing to stand behind it, which is just as important, if not more important. So on to martini number two now, and this is very unfamiliar territory for Marco Rubio, yet it's nothing actually he's done that's bad. It's just what you learned from him in an interview you did. I don't know if it was this morning or yesterday, Jim, but apparently he's actually quite serious about having no intention of being the vice presidential nominee. And for a guy who's extremely articulate, bright, conservative, obviously appeals to an important demographic from an important swing state, it would have been pretty nice to have it at least in very serious contention, if not on the ticket.
It is. And it's worth noting, this is an interview I did just this morning, talking about with Senator Rubio about a couple of topics, including his endorsement of Mitt Romney. And I began by saying, I bet you're tired of getting questions about being someone's running mate. And he said it was flattering. But he made very clear that he is not interested. And he said he's not interested before. But he came pretty close to saying that if asked, he would say no. That basically he's saying no now, very publicly, very loudly, because he does not want to be considered. He did say a very funny line. He says, this is not, it's not like you call somebody up and ask them for the prom. obviously, he knows there's several steps in the process of being vetted as a potential running mate, and he has no intention of going through that process. So I don't think he's being coy. I don't think this is a humility pose or anything. I think he really genuinely has no interest in being the Republican running mate in 2012. And as a big fan of Marco Rubio, I'm kind of disappointed, but it's his life, his decision. The guy is about 40 years old, so he's got a bright future ahead of him. He'll probably have many opportunities if he wants to run for higher office to continue. Just a glum martini today, since he would be so terrific in that role. Certainly lots of other good names out there, but, and while his humility and his desire to do as much as he can in the Senate is understandable, I think it would have been very good for Romney. very good for the party, and they may have to look elsewhere for a figure of comparable stature and electoral appeal.
Yeah, bittersweet day for Mitt Romney. He got the endorsement. He probably wishes he had it before the Florida primary, but he didn't need it, as it turned out. And obviously that'll help him in a number of ways. But, of course, to take a star like Rubio off the shortlist can't be good. On to Martini number three now, Jim. And Joe Biden should just basically take up permanent or at least temporary residence in the third Martini. Now he's at an Iowa community college, and he can't even get through the thank yous in the beginning of the speech without leading to more guffaws.
Thank you, Dr. Pepper, and thank you, Chancellor, or Dr. Pepper, and thank you, Chancellor.
I think a lot of people thank Dr. Pepper. I'm not particularly a fan of it myself, but I know a lot of people are, and, you know, I'm sure Michelle Obama was not happy with that, because I'm sure that's not part of a healthy and nutritious meal. But Joe Biden, in the terms of huge gaffes, not his greatest, certainly, but, Jim, it's par for the course.
Greg, I am a pepper. You are a pepper. Don't you wish you were a pepper, too? We're all peppers. Look, this administration has a lot of doctors in its corner, not just Dr. Pepper. Zhivago, Jay, Van Helsing, Gonzo, Dr. Moreau represents the island there. Dr. Doolittle specializes in veterinary areas for this administration. Dr. Jekyll, people say he's a little moody. Dr. Watson helps with elementary school. Dr. McCoy, the space program. Dr. Dre has probably been to the Situation Room, just as Jay-Z has. Dr. Evil, the exploration of the moon. Dr. Demento could summarize a lot of this administration's policies. If you feel like time is running out in this administration, Dr. Who could probably help with some of that. What other, like, really good, like, as soon as I started doing this, people started listing off other pop culture doctors that I myself, you know, admittedly, when I see too many of these administration's policies, I begin to adopt the bedside manner of Dr. House. So it's enough to make you sick, Greg. You know? Is there a doctor in the house?
Nicely done. Boy, you know, Joe Biden has so much material. You don't think you have a lot to necessarily go to the bank with every time he makes a gaffe, but very nicely done. That's a pop culture run right there through a number of decades. Jim, I'm sure I'll have another one for us tomorrow. Talk to you then.
I was just late breaking. Mr. Pibb is seeking to complete his last year of medical school.
Dr. Pibb by 2013, just in time for him not to be reimbursed if Obamacare survives. So
there you go,
Jim. We'll see you later.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.